IFSA is an organization of fire service personnel dedicated to upgrading firefighting techniques and safety through training. Between their manuals, ebooks, apps, curriculum, exam prep, Resource One, and more, firefighter training has never been more customizable than with IFSA FPP products. Visit them at ifsta.org for more information. Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of a fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com. This episode originally aired September 9th, 2008.
Welcome to Fire Engineering Radio and to our show, Pride and Ownership, the Love for the Job. I'm your host, Chief Rick Lasky, and I just had a great trip. Went up and did a program up in Alaska, and I'm telling you, it's a couple times up there. We got a couple more going. My partner, John Salk, and I are going to go back up there. I don't care where you go there. What an incredible, incredible group of people. We had fun. Never had a bad program. I said that before. Never been anywhere where we've had a bad program. But what the brothers and sisters in there are just they're like anywhere else. They're hungry for training. They love talking shop, talking about the job, and it was just a lot of fun. And I mean, not only is it a great place to go on vacation, but just what an incredible group of folks up there in the fire service, and just good times. Hey, I wanted to, before we get started with our guest today, I wanted to mention one more time, or a couple more times up here in the future, the programs that Fire Engineering has been doing. And obviously, if you're at the website and you've been going around there and playing with that a little bit, I've said before, you can get lost on there with just all the great stuff. You can just spend hours, with what's going on training wise. If you get a fire engineering, the community, the training community page, forget it. You'll be on there for hours, reading and getting involved in the forums and all the talks and everything. But the fire engineering, Chief Halton and the group and Diane Feldman have started the weekend training programs. We did one up in Chicago that was extremely successful, two-day program with a whole bunch of instructors. Take the guy from Louisville out of there, and there was some great talent. Where can you go where you're sitting there, and I know we mentioned this once before, but you're sitting there for an hour and a half listening to Captain Billy Gustin, and next you're listening to Dave Dotson, and the list goes on and on and on with the folks that were there doing the training, and they're going to do it again. They're going to do it in Fort Worth, Texas. So if you're anywhere in the Southwest there, October 25th and 26th, it's a Saturday and Sunday, and actually Bobby set it up where you can actually sign up for both days or one day or the other. The program is incredible. There's going to be some great instructors down there. Everybody does about an hour and a half program, so it's just constant banging away at different topics. And at the end of the day, they do kind of an unplugged or a round table, if you will, with all the instructors for that day, sit up front and interact with the attendees and the students, and just really, actually, you could do a whole day of that. That's an incredible time of the day. It's a lot of fun. Some people get to air out some things and some frustrations, and other folks just the dialogue is incredible. So if you get a chance, October 25th and 26th, go to the website, check it out. If you're looking for any information on it, give Penwell, give Fire Engineering a call. They can fill you in. It's a great program, great opportunity, man. Well worth a little bit of money you're going to spend on that one to see some great folks do some wonderful programs. Well, today we got another special guest with us. Battalion Chief Dave Rhodes with the Atlanta, Georgia Fire Department. Dave has been in the fire service for a little over 22 years, but I think he's, you take that, it's a it's 22 years. That seems like 40. He's been incredible. David is I could go on and on about what he's done in his career. One of the things that's been very important to me, I'm going to toot his horn for him because David's a very modest person, he's in charge of logistics for FDIC at Indy. And again, we always talk about this last year, how that program, 28,700 something people, for HOT, he's the logistics coordinator for the hands-on training days, which starts like a year before, and how he pulls together everything that needs to be done and the equipment, the tools. And again, having been a lead instructor there for over 10 years, and having all my brothers and sisters that teach you that program, I mean, we've talked about this before as well. Without logistics, we're nothing, whether it's on a fire ground or whether it's a training or whatever. And he just pulls things out of his sector C all the time. You'll be short this, short that, and he'll say, don't worry about it, brother, it's on the way. A lot of people, a lot of unsung heroes, if you will, that go into that conference. You hear Bobby talk about all the time that, you know, he gets to stand up there and sit in the spotlight and do all the big talks and lead everybody when it comes to the programs. But he'll be the first to tell you that there's a whole lot of people that are part of his team that are making that program a success. David served as union president at Atlanta for some time. He served over 8 years as president for Local 134. We wanted to talk about a couple of things today. And you know, this is a time, this is one of those times where we're going through these, you know, it's everything budget cuts and tough times with the economy in a lot of places. And there's a lot of chiefs that are really facing some really hard times and really are scrambling to figure out what they're going to do when the boss comes down and says, that's it. You need to cut 10% of your budget. You have to cut some departments, cut $2.5 million, cut, you know, I mean, you look at what Chicago's looking at having to cut. You look at some of the smaller departments. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how we would do it. They've asked us before to cut, and again, I'm blessed that I've got great bosses, but it's a tough time. We've been through this, you know, obviously before. It happens. We're going to get through it, but we want to talk about how to make all these things happen. But with that, Battalion Chief Dave Rose. David, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks, bud, and I have to say, since this is a talk radio format, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Well, brother, I you know, there's, you know what, before we even get started, I want you to talk about somebody for a moment here, and what he meant and still means to the fire service. But tell me about Scott Millsap, buddy. I mean, we all miss Scott. Scott, longtime contributor to fire engineering and both teaching and writing. And on the FDIC advisory board, we lost Scott several years ago to cancer. He fought that for a while. But tell some of the listeners, there's a lot of young firefighters out there that may not know who Scott was. And I think it's time that a few of them heard about him. But talk a little bit about Scott, David.
Scott was truly a very unique individual. We always would accuse him that if he had not used his talents in the fire service, he would have certainly ended up a cult leader. He just had that charisma about him that it drew people to him. He was kind of a short fella, but stocky, bodybuilder-looking type guy, and just the personality of, a thousand great guys. A funny guy to be around, but absolutely the definition of a professional. And as you said, he actually passed away on September 23rd, 2002. So time is really ticking by for us here. But he was, to me, an incredible mentor. We spent hours and hours and hours teaching together, developing programs. And one of the things that I remember, he knew he was in his final days, and one of his requests was that on his funeral program, he wanted the quote on there that "May the work I've done speak for me," and it truly does. There's so many of us here in Georgia that we still try to carry on his legacy. We got the Georgia Smoke Diver program back up and running. That was one of his babies that he took an existing program and took it to a whole nother level, and we've tried to do the same thing to keep that going. But he's just one of those kind of guys that to know him was to love him, absolutely. And he lived the definition of servant leader.
Oh yeah.
That was a phrase that we all talked about. I've actually gotten more into reading about it since he passed away and stuff. And the more I read and learn about it, the more, if you were to look in the dictionary, his picture would be right there.
Well, and David, you mentioned something that really tags him really well with it. People were drawn to him. I've got pictures of Scott at FDIC. In fact, if you remember the picture, he snuck up my daughter, Emily, when she was, what was she, about 3-4 years old. My wife Jamie and Emily came to the show, and Emily, it's when the little kids' bunker gear came out, and we bought her a little pair of bunker pants. She had a white T-shirt on, and she went to help Auntie Diane Feldman, at the fire engineering booth, hand out magazines. She's sitting up on the counter, and Diane's got her saying, "Customers, people, yeah, here's a magazine," and she's all tired. She'd been doing it all day. She was up, in the hotel room, jumping on the bed the night before and goofing, and he just snapped a picture of her. I don't know if you remember that we had it blown up. She's sitting on the counter, fire engineering's counter, with her little bunker pants on, her hair up kind of in a little bun and kind of hanging there, and she's holding one of the magazines, she's kind of like hugging it, and you see this little blue-eyed blonde little girl holding this magazine, and every time I'm looking at it right now, it's on my wall, I think of Scott. And David, one of the things he did for me, not only was he a brother, just like you said, what an incredible guy. When I was trying to make the decision, David, as to whether to leave Coeur d'Alene as fire chief and go to Louisville, because people that know me know how much I absolutely love Coeur d'Alene and the guys there and gals. And I just had Chief Kenny Gabriel on the show, and Kenny's another class act, and I love him to death. It was hard. It was difficult. I mean, I wanted to move to Louisville to be near my son, another opportunity, but how do you leave such a great group of people and a wonderful department and mayor and council? And we were standing in the little walkway that goes from, what's the hotel right across the street, David, where we teach classes from the convention? Is that the Hyatt?
The Westin.
The Westin. And we're in the little tube there, stopped right in the middle, and I said, "Scott, what do I do?" And he goes, "Well, tell me about it." And I told him, and I got to the point about but it gives me a chance to be near my son, he goes, "I think your decision's made for you. And, the guys at Coeur d'Alene will understand. You're doing it for family. You're not doing it just to be a chief somewhere else." And I made my decision right then and there, standing in that, we call it the gerbil tube, right. above the street, just sat there saying, "That's it. I'm going to do it." And he helped me that way, David. One of the other things, buddy, if you remember, and Bill Manning used to tell this story, the former editor of Fire Engineering, when Scott was not doing well towards the end there, and you would never know it. I called him one day, and he was on his way for treatment for chemo, and he didn't sound very good, but I just wanted to talk to him, and I said, "How you doing, brother?" And he says, "Cod." Before I even say that, he used to call everybody Cod.
That's right.
And a lot of people didn't know what he was talking about. And, I mean, what was he talking about? If he called you Cod, was that a compliment or was he gigging you?
Well, that was absolutely a compliment. That was his way of saying brother. And a lot of people, that was a term we used in the smoke diver program, and they would always say, "What is that? What is he talking about?" And we actually have it in our glossary, in our handbook. It says Cod, and it says the definition of Cod is it's a term of endearment. And it actually came, not many people knew this, but I finally drug it out of him one day. It actually came from the movie Patton, George C. Scott. And,
yeah.
And George C. Scott played Patton, and his aide was a Colonel Codman, I believe was his name, or Major Codman. And he called Codman Cod. And Millsap just thought that was cool, because every time Patton would refer to him, he'd say, "Hey, Cod, come here." And so he sort of adopted that, and it took on a whole other meaning. But that was absolutely a term of endearment. And still
well, and exactly, David. And for him to refer to you to say, "How you doing, Cod?" And he's in the car on the way down there, buddy. And I said, "How you doing, pal?" He says, "Well, Rick," he says, "the other day I'm sitting there, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm sitting in my doctor's office, I'm waiting to get treatment, I look over, there's a 10-year-old girl there dying of cancer," and I thought, how selfish. He was, Is he 44? How old was he?
He was 45. He died the day before his birthday. He would have been 45.
Okay, 45. He goes, Rick, he goes, I'm 44 years old. Look what I've done in my life. And this little 10-year-old girl here is dying of cancer. He goes, how can I feel bad about what's going on with what she's going through? And I just said, that's him. Yep. That's him. And then the sense of humor you talked about is when Bill Manning said, you know, when he was there with them towards the end, he said, so did the doctor give you, you know, a time? How much time did he give you? He says, well, I didn't want to hear him. He goes, you know how punctual I am.
Right.
And that's just how Scott was, you know?
The week before he passed away, Matt Mosley, again, appropriate because he was the co-author here of Marketing the Mission with me, he was getting married the following week. And Scott had already been measured for his tux, and of course he was in the wedding. And so he decided he needed to go by because he had lost so much weight with all those treatments. And I mean, you know how big of a guy Scott was, and he was down, you know, he was down around 140 pounds or smaller even. And he went back to the tuxedo shop to get remeasured, and the little service guy there that was measuring him looked at the card, and he goes, wow, he goes, you were just in here a few months ago, and he said, man, you must be on some kind of diet. This is fabulous. And Scott just kind of grinned and looked at him. He goes, yes, I am, but I don't recommend it.
Well,
you know, within a couple of days, he was gone.
I mean, there's a guy that's fighting, you know, as it was, a terminal disease, and still had a way to make people feel comfortable around him. Because something, you know, I don't know. He's just a great guy. I couldn't start off our conversation, buddy, without talking about an incredible person and what he meant and still means. He still means. He's not gone. He still means to the fire. He's only gone if you let him be gone. It's like
right.
We talked about before. You just mentioned several times how he's still, with his words and with his wisdom, still impacting programs out there. Hey, David, I want to. Right now, everybody's going through tough times. I mean, the fuel costs are up. You know, we've got an election that people are concerned about. The economy, people are laying. There's some places they're actually laying off firefighters. They're cutting positions. They're doing some things they have to do. They're doing some things that I just think are absolutely obscene. But I think that's a lot of just panic. People don't know what to do when it comes to cutting budgets and that. Let's go back. Before we even get into that, let's go back in time because I want you to talk about Marketing the Mission and you and Matt. And there was an incident that happened. First of all, let's even back up further to prior to the incident. You could talk about that a little bit, if you would, please. How were things working? When I was down there teaching for Scott and with member Skip and Bill and I were down there with you, weren't going through some of the best times with the Atlanta Fire Department. Again, I'm going to say this right now. This is a class act fire department with some absolutely incredible kick ass bury up with you brothers and sisters on a fire department. I mean, this is a great fire department, but they were going through some tough times budget wise, weren't they, back then?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of the downturn started around 95 or so when the city was having a little bit of financial problems, and some things were happening over the course of a few years, like our apparatus replacement was in the budget, and you know, we had at the time, I think, 36 engines and 16 ladder companies, and the replacement plan was 3 engines and 1 ladder company a year got bought out of the budget, and then it just continued, and that kept us on a cycle where our apparatus, you know, was a good 10-15 year type replacement cycle. And those were some of the first things to get cut. And it doesn't really take but a couple of years of missing those, and you really start degrading. We had swapped into a new breathing apparatus that had just come on the market right there around the Olympics. And we started experiencing some problems with it. Some of our guys were getting hurt as a result of some mechanical failures with it. Then the talk about paying the police officers more money than the firefighters began a big push with the city council, and we were headed downhill morale wise. And it's funny you mentioned the work in logistics at FDIC. It seems like those sometimes become some of the first things that are gone after. and you wind up with a department that has 34 or 35 stations, but your budget to support that is really only sufficient to support about 20 stations. And so everything is spread real thin. As time ticked on, I guess, we had a short little rise during the Olympics because of the international community being there, and of course the city wanted to make a good showing. So we kind of hung on by the seat of our pants there. But in 97, we really, really started seeing the problems increase. Fire apparatus were breaking down on the way to calls. Guys were having to get on the radio and go out of service. I remember one particular incident where guys were inside on the nozzle fighting a fire, and the truck just went down. And it was totally due to maintenance. And we were having those kind of problems all the time. Ladders setting up and something being wrong, and the ladder would swing around and not stay locked on an aerial. And what had been cut out is, things like pump testing, routine maintenance, ladder testing, and all that. All those things had sort of gone by the wayside due to budget cuts. And one of the side effects of those budget cuts happening like that is if they last long enough, then a new generation comes in and they haven't seen what's supposed to go on. And so we end up in this state of we don't know, we don't know. And so you got some pretty good guys that may be in charge, but they don't know what the actual job is supposed to entail, and they just go through the motions. And so we were in a state of disrepair.
Well, and David, real quick, and I don't know if you remember it. I remember two things when I was there. One is the tape from the city council meeting about raises that year for the firefighters, and whether they were needed or not. And the other thing was that year, the tool budget that was set for the fire department, the tool budget, 35 stations at the time, right?
Right.
Do you remember what the tool budget was?
It was under $10,000. It was like nothing.
I tell people when I go and teach and we talk about making it through some tough times, and I'm always talking about what you and Matt did, the impact you've had on the fire service, that the two of you had with the program marketing the mission, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Just that little ditty that you did at FDIC has just turned some fire departments around big time. I said, if you had a 35 station, set up and this and that and blah 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 blah, what do you think your annual tool budget, new tool budget, would be for that department? I don't even say where it's at, and $10,000 is like what they would spend on one rig, when it comes to stuff. If that, I mean, that's, and no one believes it. But I'm like, dude, it's true. That's the times that they were going through.
Yep.
And Atlanta probably was the only one doing it. I know you're being as heavy as involved as you are with the international. There's other fire departments that were going through the same thing, David.
Absolutely. And the thing is, in getting ready for the show, I went back and looked at the fire engineering article that I did on the subject, and it's a timeless piece. It could have been written yesterday, and it'll apply to some fire department. And I'm sure 50 years from now, the same will hold true, because it's at the core of the structure that we're in. We're in a political structure. We're relying on budgets. It seems to me that the departments that fare the best seem to be the departments that have a dedicated tax base in the form of a millage rate for fire protection. We see that generally in the county-type government setup, but the city-type government setups tend to use the general fund type budgeting practice, and all the departments compete for the same dollars. But those counties and governments that use that fire tax, that fire millage rate, are able to get referendums on ballots and all. And that money's guaranteed for them, where a general fund budget is not. It's real easy to shift monies and cut funds.
But that also comes down to, too, and I know what you're saying, because that's the big talk between, like, fire protection districts. I know in Illinois it was always, the fire protection districts, didn't get the sales revenue as much as they got the property tax, but on the other hand, they didn't have to compete with the library and with Public Works and the PD and all that stuff when it came to money. On the other hand, they had less of it you know, sometimes. I mean, everybody had, you know, there's the pros and cons and all that. And my buddy Tom Freeman, the chief of Lyle Woodridge, the fire district on the southwest side of Chicago, there, west side of Chicago, he and his crew have done some pretty incredible things with funding. You want to talk to a guy who's a genius. He's a genius anyway, but there are some. I mean, I think, David, sometimes it's priorities. I'm fortunate. Everywhere I go, people know. You know, I don't talk about Louisville without saying I've got incredible bosses. And this fire department here, I'm telling you, I'll say it out loud, it was embarrassing to see where things were with the apparatus, the stations, the equipment, the turnout gear, the radios, David. And, you know, we had rigs that were, like you did, plugged into life support, air hoses, battery cables, and water hoses. And, you know, our city council and our mayor and our especially our city manager and his group, when we went to them and talked to them, and they made a conscious decision that they were going to turn that around. And this year, with as big as a budget as we have, over $14 million, we asked for less than $200,000 worth of stuff. Out of 16 things, we got 11, and that's even with times being extremely lean. And there's a whole other reason why that happens. The guys are out there doing stuff too, but I think sometimes, David, it's just where are priorities? You know, they're trying to balance things, and I'm actually going to have my boss on here in the near future to talk about that side of things and how do you run that corporation. But you're right. I mean, I think some of it's priorities, and some places, you know, you look at it and you go, how do you let a fire engine break down or a patrol car? I don't get that, but go ahead, buddy. Keep going with the.
It's absolutely priorities, and I guess one of the things that gets me so fired up and actually led to me running for union president back there in 1997 was the lack of prioritizing the things that were what was best for the community and for the department. And it seems like when we get in these tough times, there's a tendency to overreact in some ways that you talked about a few minutes ago. There's also a tendency to do things and then pretend that they have no impact. And that just really gets me fired up, because the thing is that the, you know, the line firefighter has to understand is that, you know, the fire chief has to manage the fire department based on the budget that he is able to secure, you know, from the political side of the government. And the fire chief doesn't necessarily have total control over how much he gets. He, you know, he's going to have to work with what he's given. And if you're having to lay off people, if you're having to close stations, you know, I mean, it may get to that point, but you have to make those decisions based on what can you actually support. I made a suggestion in our department not too long ago when we were facing budget cuts here this year, and I think the total ended up being about $13 million we got cut, but was to take a little bit different approach. We always say, okay, you got to cut $1 million out of your budget, and a knee-jerk reaction is to go and look at the very last things that you put in place and then take those out.
Mm-hmm.
And what I suggested was, let's find out how much we're going to get, and let's build the fire department from scratch. Let's get in a room and build the fire department from scratch. If we're going to have $60 million, $66 million, $70 million, whatever it is, let's build a fire department based on that number. Let's don't cut back from what we have. Let's just start over and see what we come up with. That way we know we've got the structure to support it. We know that we've got the money in for maintenance, for things, for health and safety, for the firefighters and all, instead of just closing whatever was the last thing we put in service, the last engine company that was brought up, or the last program that we started. And it's difficult to do that, because the easy way out is to just close the last thing, because you know, you're thinking, well, that's a luxury. And it may not be. Times change, and you have to adjust and adapt your department and your philosophy, your resources to the changing environment that you're responding to. And so you really need to look at it from the bottom up and rebuild the organization based on the funds that you get.
Well, David, one of the first things I know that disappears is training. You know, the very first thing they cut is training, and you know, along with, like you said, what do we just add that we probably can get rid of? And then we look at the line of duty deaths. We look at the contributing factors, those causes, some of those things that happen, and it all reverts back to